Max Hall and Melbourne Football Club. You're listening to the Coaches Panel.
This is Nat Fyfe from the Fremantle Footy Club.
Trent Cotchin from the Richmond Footy Club.
Scott Benderbury from the Collingwood Football Club. You're listening to the Coaches Panel.
Patrick Cooch from the Carlton Footy Club.
It's Rory Sloane here from the Adelaide Crows.
This is Tom Mitchell. You're listening to the Coaches Panel.
Hey friends, it's MJ from the Coaches Panel. I hope you're well and welcome to another Supercoach Strategy Roundtable where we help you with the big decisions that you have got to make for your Supercoach side heading into round five. And boy, we got some serious decisions to make that could really set us up for the rest of our Supercoach season. Joining me on this episode, he has right throughout not only this season and preseason, but now for the better part of 18 months, regular part of the Coaches Panel stable. Mini Monk, you're doing double duty this week. You did the AFL Fantasy Strategy Roundtable that was out yesterday, back on the Supercoach one. Well done for you doing double duty, mate.
Oh, double duty is not too bad. It's a good way to spend the evening having a chat with the hair, best hair in the business.
Oh, it takes only not even 30 seconds in the pod and it just fires up. Not too bad. If you're watching on YouTube, you can see why. This is the last day you see it in its 30s. Just so you know, it hits 40s on Thursday. So is this where it starts to fall out? I don't know. There's no good way to transition without it looking like I'm a jerk now, is there? From the Supercoach Insider podcast, you can check them out on YouTube. They do a great round of work. I got to meet this man in person around about 6 weeks ago at the Supercoach launch and just connected with him straight away on a Supercoach level. One of the best minds in the business. Swizz, hello, mate. Nice to have you on the podcast.
Mate, thank you so much. You've been on mine twice, so I thought it's glad that I got the invite to yours. And I've said not to blow smoke up your... behind there, mate, but it is one of the few podcasts that I still do listen to. You do get into a situation as a podcaster there where you spend a lot of time doing your own stuff but don't get a lot of time to listen to everyone else's. But the top 50 in particular leading into the season has always been high on the radar, and I know it's the same with a few mates out there as well. So awesome to finally be on this great podcast talking with you and Mini Monk tonight. So look forward to it. And yeah, just surprised just to find out that you and I are the same age, and that I think you've got me beaten by about a week there. So yeah, your hair's looking a little bit better than mine for the big 4-0. But yeah, you and I in a week's time, mate. So
all right.
We obviously are celebrating the next chapter of our lives.
Okay, just setting us out to pasture there, Swizz, very, very quickly. There's a ton of stuff, boys, I want to get through. I want to talk about trade boosts and how we use them. There's a ton of great value options that are presenting themselves, not just now, but over the next couple of weeks. I want to talk about the ruck line. So many Grundy owners are really wrestling with what to do this week. We want to help put that to bed. Got to talk about our Supercoach forwards as well. But the thing that really unlocks a lot of the moves that we want to make over the next couple of weeks really is what happens with our cash generation and the options we're looking to go to down. There are some that I know people are looking at a Jeremy Sharp this week. They're looking still at an Ollie Dempsey. And they're absolutely plays if you would like to head that way. But maybe we start there. Mini Monk, talk to me about Dempsey. And then, Swizz, I'll get you to talk about Sharp for me in a moment. Before we hit some of the guys that are yet to be even on the bubble, these are maybe the last chances to get either of these options. Mini Monk, Dempsey, knowing we're about to look at three viable plays, is it just not let him go, or is there still a reason to jump on Dempsey this week?
Well, yes, there is. And the reason why is I don't want to jump the gun too much, but if we look at those viable options that are coming, they're not quite on the bubble yet this week. So they're not going to be going up in cash. They're not going to be the ones that will get away from you, like Dempsey has started to do over these last couple of weeks, where he's now had his two price changes and he's still rocking a minus 14 break even. Really good role. Forward line's pretty weak. It's a fieldable option pretty much every single week. Yes, best 18 can hide a bad score, but I don't think that there'll be many teams that'll be unhappy with having him at F6 come out of the early buys and coming into round 7. I think that absolutely he's still an option this week with how consistent his scoring has been. But this absolutely is the last week. Once you're starting to pay in excess of $280,000, $290,000, potentially even $300,000 for a player who is a rookie, you are really pushing your luck as to whether you can generate enough cash and enough points out of them while still being able to perform all the upgrades that you need to form in your team. So if you need someone at around that, you know, 260K marker that is going to go up in cash and might only be 3 or 4 weeks it needs to be in your team for, absolutely you can go for him.
Swizz, is it very, very similar for Jeremy Sharp? Again, a very different position and a better break even for us this week. What's your take on Jeremy Sharp as a priority for non-owners to trade into this week?
Yeah, non-owner like myself. So definitely high on the radar. Like as Minnie Monk said, the rookies that we have available aren't must trade in this week. We do get another look at them. You know, we'll talk about Closey and Combin and all those guys, I'm sure, later. So if you're going to make the move and you wanted to have somebody who this is your last chance to grab, then, yeah, Sharp or Dempsey are definitely there. Sharp, I like, because obviously he's got the 126 against a very good opponent in Carlton. Yeah, another tough opponent this week with Port Adelaide, but does have that draw that opens up with West Coast Bulldogs, Richmond. So, you know, with Supercoach projections, they've got him sort of going that 68, 65s in those weeks, which is pretty well what he's been doing in previously. And that sees him going up sort of 80, 90K as it is. Definitely against sort of West Coast or Richmond, he could definitely put up a massive score again like he just did against Carlton. And if that was the case, he could reset his gen and be looking at 150K, which would be better than most of the rookie options that we're looking at as it is. So if he was to get himself to 400K, yeah, okay, it's a shame we missed the 130 if you haven't got him already, but you're still looking at getting what is better than a lot of the rookie options that we've got available.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
I think the other thing to note with him is that he's really going to benefit from the larger grounds, and that's what he's got from the rest of the games from here on forward up until you know, round 12 where they play at Traeger up in the Northern Territory. He's got Adelaide Oval against Ports, pretty tough matchup for outside players. Might be a bit of a trickier week this week, but as you said, West Coast at Optus, Dogs at Optus, Richmond at the MCG, Sydney at Optus, St Kilda at Marvel, under the roof, Collingwood at Optus, like, he is a player that is just running the feed off of other opposition wingers. He's knowing how to hold his space, and there's potential that he can pop another spike game or two in that next 6 or 7 week block.
It's it's only about $50,000, $60,000 if you're sitting on a dead option like a Sexton or a Lazaro or even a Caulfield type, and you've got the options of looping some DPP Swizz. He could, while we want to maximize points on field, cash generation is still so important for us at this time of year, isn't it?
Well, the obvious one, and even this includes myself, is Tom Berry. I know 10% of the competition have him, and you're talking about, I think, 25K difference, something like that, which is really nothing. There's ways to finding that. So, if you've got somebody like him, I feel like that's an easy reset the cash. Take what you've made, that 70, 80K of like a Berry type, for example, or one of those other rookies who have stalled. Even, you know, you could even look at, say, Cadman, like the break even of -3, I don't probably want to move him, but you know, you're probably only going to get one more decent rise out of him, unless he has, you know, a massive game against St Kilda, which probably doesn't look like the obvious thing that's going to happen, where, you know, pretty well side swapping him to a Sharp. Yeah. And as Mini Monk said, on those open fields, in particular in Optus, you could turn him into a guy that could get to 400,000, if not more, and leading into that sort of upgrade season, the buy season, there might be a fall in premium, which it's only 100K to go from Sharp to him. And, yeah, imagine turning Sharp into, say, Clary or something like that. You'd be flying.
You would not even hear about that at the start of the year. And that's the beauty. Much changes as the season goes on. Let's talk about these three yet-to-be bubble boys with boosts and how coaches like to play the game much more aggressively, given so many more trades available to us in Supercoach. We can certainly look to do a couple of different things. Closey's certainly the best of the three options in terms of price and score. of what he did for us last week when you put those two elements together. Mini Monk, is it too dangerous to say this statement? You need to get one of these three, being Graham, Combin, and Closey, this week before the bubble? Or is it no, you can afford to wait for at least 1 week and not get at least one of them this week?
I think it'd be very dangerous to not get at least one of them, because if all three of them are on the bubble with negative 80, 100, 120 even break evens come the end of round five, you don't want to triple downgrade it to the three of them. You want to be able to get an upgrade off next week. And if you don't own all three of them, you are going to be falling behind, because that's probably $100,000 that's just gone down the drain that you've missed. And to my mind, if you said at the start of the season that you'd have a player who's 102K in your defensive line with a negative 68 break even, you'd go, great, I'll trade into them. But then you tell me that they're not on the bubble this week and that they've got another week to drop that break even lower. To me, that screams pick me this week. So like, I think if you're picking one of those three, it has to be Closey this week. There's less concerns about his job security. There's less concerns about his scoring because he's a mature ager. But I think it's very dangerous to not trade into at least one, and potentially to actually not even to trade into two of them. I think that trading into two this week is a viable option for a lot of teams.
Yeah, I think it's a really good shout, which then Swizz gives us one of two other options, which again, depending on our structures, does give us a bunch of different options. Will Graham as a defender mid, and then Charlie Combin as a mature body who's playing in a new role and will pick up DPP should he play the next two games, given Supercoach confirmed it's just three games for them to be positional eligible to change. If Closey's in, let's presume that what Mini Monk has said is right, and that's always a good way I like to play Supercoach. What Mini Monk says, I'll kind of take it to the bank for the most part. Who of Combin and Graham are you prioritizing? And don't give me the Mini Monk team dependent. Give me something straight line here that we can help people.
That's really how I was going to go. Because I was going to say I like Combin better, because I think, you know, we talked about on our podcast about Pink and his job security going forward does not look great. Combin came in, looked like Glenn Djakovic playing. He was taking every intercept mark. He grew into that game by that last quarter. You know, you're up against two of the Hipwood's out of form, but Danaher's one of the better forwards in the league, and he had no problems, you know, zoning off, taking intercept marks, contested marks, and the fact that he still managed to get 25 touches. Now, he's not going to do that every week, but he grew into that with confidence, and so I've got enough confidence that the fact that North Melbourne are going to see so much ball down there that he's going to continue to find it, and there's because they're so short of tools, it's not like there's somebody knocking on the door that's going to take his role. Pink's had his opportunity. He'd have to do something tremendous in the VFL to push Combin out. Where Graham, I can see a bit of swapping around with the Suns. Dimmer's already started like that, moving players around. So as much as I feel like if Graham has, you know, another good week this week, he's not going anywhere. But at the same time, I'm way more confident on Combin's job security, scoring potential. So I'd rather just pay up for him if I'm going to go both, and then just have another look at what happens with Will Graham this week.
Yeah, it's going to be much easier to trade into Graham next week with both his DPP and the lower price. And I think Swizz, you're 100% right. I have a lot less concerns about Combin's job security than I do about Graham's. And for those, I guess, three reasons, like the DPP, the price, and the job security, I think if you're picking one of those two this week, it's going to be Combin.
Yeah, that's a good shout. It's an interesting spot we're in with some of our cows. Some people still are running a dead couple of options in their backline. Reed, I don't think you'd be prioritizing moving him. Looks like he's 2 to 3 weeks away, but, you know, he's an option. Caulfield is months away, and absolutely when the right defender option comes along, you must get it. Hence why people were looking at a Draper last week. Lazaro's stalled, Sexton has stalled. And then we've got a couple of other guys that could be just 2 weeks away from really topping out, whether that be a Carroll, for example, or Wilson is getting close to really hitting that average and break even in alignment. So there's a bunch of interesting options there. And even a Howes, for example, it's an interesting spot with him this week, Swizz, because that first matchup this week with them playing on Thursday night, again, he hits that beautiful sweet spot of average and break even, pretty much in alignment. History would say in Supercoach, we move him on. But that first trade on Thursday night does impact a lot of what you do with the rest of your moves, with the Sunday squads not locked. How much of a priority to you is moving Blake Howes on this week?
It's not the be-all and end-all for me. I can understand why he's the popular one because, you know, he's the obvious to get money. People obviously looking closely, you know, it makes 120K. But in saying that, Howes with a break-even still of 50, 56, he's gone past that three times. He had a poor start of last week. That 26, did affect some of the cash gen. But, yeah, if he came out and scored sort of an 80, you know, he could still definitely put an extra 10K on there. He's got the ability to score. He definitely looked a lot better playing at the MCG than he did at the Adelaide Oval. Maybe it's just the wide wings of the MCG probably maybe suited him a little bit more there. But the fact of the matter is he does have the bye the following week, so I can see why if you're not going to trade him this week, you're probably going to trade him next week anyway. So moving on, is it a big deal? No. So I feel like of the trades that I want to do, he's probably the one that I am. It's just the obvious because it's one extra week and we've already got a rookie there, as we've talked about, who's, you know, the obvious to trade in just because of his role and his job security.
Yeah. I want to talk about the rucks with you. Now, the reason I'm not mentioning James Jordan just yet, we can do it here, is politely, if you're a Jordan owner, if he's not one of the first guys you're moving on this week and you've not considered that, you're missing a massive trick. And so he becomes, whether it be the Comben downgrade, whether through the powers of DPP you're getting in closely or whatever it actually is, Jordan has made us some decent coin, not as much as we wanted, but he's done his job for us. He's protected us with a couple of rubbish cow forward scores we've got here in Supercoach. He's done his job. He's gone. So we don't need to spend a lot of time pondering the nuance of James Jordan. He's a trade out. It's just whether you're going up or down is the different conversation that I want to get to in a minute. But if you're going down, it does give you some money if you're a Grundy owner to be able to look at. And so, Mini Monk, talk to me about Brody Grundy. He's been okay. Again, not as big as I think we would have hoped. Cherry's clearly been the quote-unquote value ruck that was the right approach at R2 now, if you wanted to do that. Does Grundy have to go? And if he does, there's probably three leading contending options. You could say mix an option if you like, and I'll hear that conversation too. But if you're going up, there's really only three options, and one of them's not an option just due to his bye. So does Grundy got to go this week?
No, he doesn't have to go this week. But I would question as to what are your expectations if you are holding him? What are you wanting from him? If you're continuing to hold him, do you want him to just stagnate at about the 100 marker between now and his buy? Because I think that's probably the most likely outcome. I don't think that we would see him as a top two ruck at this stage of the year. I think that it's pretty clear that Gawn, English, and Marshall are the top three ruckmen in Supercoach. And I think that you will want to be ending the season and probably going into the mid-season buys with two of them. So then the question becomes, if you're not trading Grundy now, when are you looking to trade him? Are you looking to do a swap to English when he bottoms out in price? Are you looking to try and nab one of the other two when they get a bit lower in price? Or is there a fixture run that you like for Grundy that you don't like for the others and you think there's a fixture swap time for them? If you do your research and you come to a conclusion that you're happy enough that you can hold him for the next 5-6 weeks. You've got other issues in your team. You want to be able to prioritize getting onto, you know, as we talked about, a Comben and a Clohessy this week, and you want to do an upgrade in your midfield and in your defensive line instead. I'd hear that argument, but I'd want to have a plan as to what I'm doing with Grundy over the next 5-6 weeks, because I don't think I'd want to be holding him much longer than that.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Swizz, talk to me about these upgrade options again. Gorn is absolutely viable, but with him being on the bye next week, I couldn't advocate for that. You'd rather, as Minimunk said, just roll a further 2 weeks and then make that move. But if you were making that move based on averages, there are a few viable options. Again, I'm going to put Nane Kervis in the same conversation. I know you're repping your Richmond get-up on this episode to sneak it in. We're missing our token Richmond supporter in Ritz. So Jackson, I don't think anyone's trading into. The owners, I think, are okay to hold, but I think so we really are talking about two. We've got Marshall at just over 600K and English at just under 700K. So my question to you, if you're bullish on Grundy out, is English that much better than Marshall that it's worth spending the extra 90K now on that move?
Yeah, well, I think it is just English versus Marshall. Potentially, like, I like Cherry better than Nank anyway. Nank's got a bye coming up, so I don't think you could throw him completely out because Cherry's doing well. But again, Cherry's averaging 105. As you said before, like Grundy, what are you expecting from him? If he's not going 110, is it really worthwhile? Because I feel like you're going to be giving up at least 10 points a week to either a Marshall or English. English like looks great. The problem is I feel like both of them are in the kind of same boat. At what point does a Lobb or a Campbell probably come in, maybe give them a chop out at some point? It's hard to have that load of the ruck for 22 weeks, but the fact of the matter is they're both in the exact same situation as each other. Mm. And then English is 90, K more. I feel like Marshall's fixture coming up makes him really appealing. It's, he really came onto his own last year as the sole ruck, especially that second half of the year. You still got like your Briggs and English up against, but they kind of, especially English is a different kind of ruckman to Marshall. So Marshall will probably get him in the ruck and then can still zone back like Gorn does himself. But then that run where they're playing Port Adelaide, North Melbourne, Hawthorn, West Coast coming up into their bye, there's some really juicy games for Rowan Marshall. And the fact of the matter is, like English, they both have to win games. It's not like they're sitting cruising up the top of the mat of the ladder. So I don't see a lot changing. He looked so good zoning back and helping out the defense on the weekend, Marshall. So how many points is realistically English going to probably get on him? I feel like it might be as close as 5, and I don't think that's worth the extra 90, 100K, especially with the fact that even if English is sort of going 115, 120, he could still drop some cash anyway. So if you, for whatever reason, had you didn't have Gorn or you had neither right now, you could potentially still pick up an English cheaper if you had a Cherry as just R2, and maybe you went Grundy or Cherry, you went something completely different. So you can potentially look at English later in the year if it just became a must. But right now, I think Marshall is the more value player for sure.
Mini Michael, talk to me about Tim English, because it's not just English on his own. We've got a guy that currently has got 24% centre bounce attendance in a Sam Darcy that is, we called it on our podcast. I know, Swizz, you were very similar last week, that one of the greatest downgrade options gifts coming to us was Darcy last week. And if you've missed it, oh boy, it's hurting, and correct it. Maybe that's your priority over a Dempsey, for example, if you haven't got that. But does a potential Darcy DPP make English more enticing for you, knowing that should English go down, that only aids the handcuffing, which is a very draft strategy, I know, of these two players? Or does that make zero difference to you because everyone's got Darcy anyway?
I think it's on the contrary. I think the fact that Darcy is rucking so much to the point where he's likely to pick up DPP concerns me more for English. You know, Swizz was just talking before about how we've got Sam Darcy and Rory Lobb as concerns for English, and we've got Tom Campbell as a concern for Marshall. Well, Marshall doesn't have Tom Campbell in his team right now. English does have Sam Darcy in his team. And the other thing that I've noticed, and this was pointed out to me by a couple of people, so I can't remember exactly who pointed it out to me, but in the second half of the game that they had against Geelong, English took the brunt of the ruck work. He took about 90%, where it was about an 80-20 split in the first half of the game. But against West Coast, that split didn't happen. Sam Darcy had a lot of the split throughout the entirety of the game. So it seems like where there's a bit of an easier kill, they're trying to give Sam Darcy more experience in the ruck. They're trying to give him the ability to chop out and give him the time to be able to develop his ruck skills against quality ruckmen. And if you look at West Coast run, they probably, sorry, not West Coast run, the Western Bulldogs run.
Bulldogs.
They've got Essendon this week. They'd probably be going in as pretty good favourites for that. They've got St Kilda, so that'll be a tough matchup. But Darcy will be wanting to be tried out against Marshall. Same with against Jackson and Darcy in Fremantle. And then you've got Hawthorn and Richmond, which are pretty soft matchups. I would say that they should go in as favourites for both of those.
Yeah.
That would scare me as an English owner. That would scare me that he's not going to get that high 80%, no, low 90% ruck time. And if he's not getting those ruck stoppages, there is a chance that his average does drop. There's a chance that he goes only 105 to 110. Like, he could still go 120, could still go 130 from here until the end of the season. But just the fact that the player that is chopping out the ruck is already there and they need to develop him and keep him progressing as a player because he's come on so quickly this season, that scares me enough. Combined with the price difference, combined with the ruck runs that they've got coming up, I would be going Marshall over English this week.
Mini Mount, can I'll just add something to that as well. We saw with the Bulldogs easily accounting with West Coast that they were like, okay, we'll sub Libba this week. Just to give him a rest. It would not completely surprise me if the Bulldogs were dominating a Hawthorn or a Richmond, that if not Bont, maybe Tim English is the one that makes way, since like if they were 7-8 goals up at three-quarter time, why wouldn't they go, okay, Darcy, here's a chance to run sole ruck for one quarter. Timmy English, you just have a rest because we're not going to lose anything out of this game. Could you see that as a possibility?
I could see that it's a possibility, but I also do see that as a possibility for Marshall, and it's happened to him already just last year. We did see him get subbed out at three-quarter time. I think it was against Gold Coast. He had the soft ruck matchup because Witz was the laid out and he was rucking against Moyle. If something similar happens again, he could get to a good score and then be subbed out. And the same thing for English. They could both get to a good score by three-quarter time and get subbed out on a good score. But it is always a concern, I think that it's like that we're seeing a lot. And with someone like Luke Beveridge as your coach, I know that we don't like to throw him too much stick, but I think we've already seen it in these last two or three games where they've had McRae, Caleb Daniel, Liberatore all be involved in the sub one way or another. I wouldn't be surprised if he did it with an English, maybe even with a Bont at some stage as well, heaven forbid.
Gosh, just freaking everybody out listening to this now. Like, every Bulldog is doomed. Thanks, boys. You've really helped everybody out. Let's move away from options. Let's talk about the forward line. Politely, it's better than I think was forecast 6 to 8 weeks ago. 6 to 8 weeks ago, guys like Zach Fisher were people's F1s. And if you can imagine just 5 or 6 weeks ago, knowing what you know now, like, it just feels gut-wrenching around that. We have been gifted some great options. Isaac Heaney into the midfield has been really a very easy selection. That's not a hindsight call, but with opening round, you took a gambit and a gauntlet on that you didn't need to if you faded on him. Luke Jackson, we knew that we would get at least 4 weeks without Darcy, and history had told us he's a 110-plus super coach scorer, pushing 120, and that's pretty much what he's been for us over the past 4 weeks. Sam Flanders, if you didn't start him, you were prioritising getting him after the bye. And then probably the surprise packets, there's a couple. Harry Mackay has really kind of put it all together, and getting involved in the game a little bit more has built his confidence, which I think is aiding some of his presence up forward. Tom Powell has really popped. And those, you know, Swizz, I know in your podcast, a lot of people, and you yourself, were talking about Hogan as an early kind of 4-week streamer and then looked as a flip option. You're probably not even needing to do that now, given there's nothing there. A lot of premise set there. Last one before I get both your boys' thoughts on forwards and what we should be doing over these next couple of weeks is based on DPP that's coming in 2 weeks' time. There is nothing at the upper echelons that is appearing to come our way. We might get a Sanders type. We might get a Sparrow type. We might get a Simpkin type, but these are not upper echelon 95, 100 plus options. And so my question to both of you is this. Let's presume everyone has Heaney. Now, yeah, no, it is a bold premise, but I think if people don't, it's like, well, you know, you got to do something about that. But if you have Heaney, what the heck do you do next with your forward line? Who are the priorities and who are the players we should be targeting? Swizz, we'll start with you first. Heaney, we've got him. What should people be doing with the other options elsewhere?
Yeah, it is a real tough one. I think the forward line here for F5 and F6 is where I think you can probably take the biggest punt on somebody left field, even if it is potentially a 6 to 8 week run leading into the buys. I think this is where fixture dependent really comes into it. I love doing it in my drafts. Like, I'll streamline, you know, tall forwards, small forwards, whatever. A good one was, say, Todd Marshall recently, picked up off the waivers, running with him in my draft league. Now, it's a little bit different than Classic because I'm trying to, you know, find guys further down. But I feel like there are certain players, and we've talked about, like, the Suns and the how much, you know, you need Flanders right now because their fixture opens up massively. So is there another potential Sun, like Ben King, for example? Some people jumped on him, Max King last week, hoping that he'd go well against the Tigers. Break even is still 36. He's the main focal point down at St Kilda. And they do have North Melbourne, Hawthorn, West Coast leading into their bye. So is it somebody like that who's already one of the higher averaging players? We saw Taylor Adams come in for his first game, get a 97, has a bye this week. So we potentially get another week to look at him to see the role, more importantly, but also what to see if he scores. If he goes around that 9,500 mark again, is he the one that we've got to go, okay, yes, you're in coming in as our F5. So there is a couple options there. Even the biggest left field that no one's been talking about this year, but Jeremy Cameron is one that I think people need to maybe have on the watch list. Sort of 18 months ago, he was the best player in the competition. Gets injured and then kind of it's just sort of pushed to the side. Had the 100 again last week. You know, he had the poor score against Adelaide, but you're going to get that with key forwards. But then Charlie Kurnell was a top 10 last year, and I feel like there's less better forward premium options this year. So if Geelong are going to be up and about, why not Jezza? Why not somebody like that? So I think that's where we're going to see a lot of different options in this space. And there's no kind of right or wrong, but I think those who jump on the right player at the right time is going to get the massive ranking boost that we're all craving for.
Mini Monk, I'm curious, Swizz, you know, both on the Supercoach Insider and even throughout this, and I know you've referenced it too, has talked about this impeccable Gold Coast run that is coming up for us. And if you don't own Flanders, okay, that's a top line option. Took Miller is a great option pretty much after this week. It really opens up. But then we mentioned these forwards, and there's a Jack Lacosha sitting there for us around about that $400,000 mark. Is he potentially a guy you feel comfortable taking that gamble on? As Swizz has mentioned, outside of Heaney, Jackson and Flanders, you're probably not looking at a premium option just yet to trade into if you don't have one of those three. Is Lacocious maybe the secret sauce here?
It could well be. I mean, he's moved back into his defensive line for the Suns. He's had a couple of really good games the last two. He's gone 87 and 95 against the Dogs and GWS. And GWS aren't the easiest matchup for outside type players either. And they were playing up in the Adelaide Hills. So not the easiest ground to rack up on either. But he could be an option. He genuinely could be a top six forward for us in 2024. And I think that that says as much about how good of a player Lukosius is as well as how bad our forward lines are. But the other thing is he'll pick up defender for DPP. Like, that's a great DPP to have. Like, you quite often are looking for players. I remember last year we had, you know, Jack Zeeble had that DPP. And it's fantastic to be able to make those switches around with those sorts of players. I think that it's one that's fraught with danger, but I think that the upside is that he's probably at a very appealing price. Like at that 400K marker, you're really not having to pay too much to get him. Like you can move James Jordan to him very easily if you wanted to. You could move a Zach Fisher to him if you wanted to do that. Even move a Nat Fife if you're wanting to do that. Like, it's generally a world where he pops up 120 sometime in the next 3 weeks if you look at the fixtures. He's got Hawthorn, he's got Sydney, he's got West Coast. Brisbane at the Gabba is a bit tricky, but then he's got North Melbourne and Geelong. Like, the fixtures in terms of the quality of the opponents that he's facing are there. In terms of the grounds he's playing at, look, it's a bit trickier. He is playing up on the Gold Coast and against Hawthorn and West Coast. He's at the SCG against the Swans. He's at the Gabba against the Lions. And then he's up at TAO against Brisbane and North Melbourne. That's probably the tricky part for me. But it's someone that I would consider taking the punt on.
Yeah. It's your risk appetite question really there, isn't it? Of what are you happy to and prepared to do? I want to talk trade boosts in a moment as we look to wrap up the episode. But before we get there, my oh my, have we got some unbelievable cheap options that are presenting for us very, very soon. I don't think anyone thought Clayton Oliver could be pushing towards 500,000, but there is a world over the next month, even with the buy coming after this week, where he continues to plummet. Jordan Dawson and disposal efficiency and on the negative side was probably something people never thought would ever be statements and sentiments that are said, and yet here it is. James Sicily, we know he's always a bit of a roller coaster scorer, but really outside of 1 week, he hasn't given us much ceiling. And then, of course, you've got Nick Dacos, where those that started him were doing it for fear and concern that, oh man, he could take a season away from me in 4 weeks. And absolutely, he could do that. But now for owners, they're looking at a guy that he's already dropped 80,000, which doesn't sound like much. And in the sense of your season, it might not be. But now the priority of getting him in is pretty huge. And then there's a ton of other options. Jordan DeGoey is a viable play through there. And I could list 15 other players. But Swizz, help us through. And Minimark, I want your thoughts on this too. Help us navigate. LDU, I probably should throw in the mix of that too, to be fair. Help us navigate some options here because we've got 10 to 20 really good top line options, not just value that are close to top liners, but historical top line options. Who do we prioritize? How do we prioritize getting the right options at the right time to maximize these low prices, these players?
Yeah, well, it is a tough one. It's funny when you mentioned LDU, he was the one I had open in front of me on my screen here. I feel like a lot of people's setup is they've got the five premium midfielders in there, maybe a couple of people running a little bit shorter than four, but probably the five. So, and a lot of people are kind of running that Bont, Green, Butters, maybe a Sarong, that sort of mixture anyway. So I feel like, you know, those who are don't have, you know, the dropping in Cash Dawson and especially Kyrie are going to be too high on the radar for most people. And the fact that they, you know, having those guys at sort of M7, M8 at 500K, I think they'll be crazy, too hard to ignore. And it'll be probably running in a great time where sort of in that 3 week style, at least Oliver has a buy at least, so that probably pushes it further out, where maybe your McKercher type, Roberts, in particular, say Roberts, who's already 335 with a low break even, could be getting close to that 400K mark. Like 100K is not hard to find in Supercoach, you know, downgrading, you know, a guy that's 200 into one of these 100, 123 guys. So, yeah, imagine your Roberts, your McCurchy, your Sanders, those sort of players in 3 weeks' time could be pushing and where they need to be culled. And yeah, if you're trying to move on to a player, yeah, Dawson and Oliver seem very obvious sort of choices.
Meeman,
yeah,
help us through.
You kind of want to look. You want to look for the players where they can turn it around easily. You want to look for the players that still have access to the easy brawls. They've still got the ball. They've still got the ability to be able to score, and just something's not clicking. And I think for both Oliver and Dawson, as Swizz has said, they both players that have that ability. They both have the ability to find the ball. They both have those inside grid roles. Clary's had the time off during the preseason. He's coming a little bit underdone, probably compared to where his normal level is at. He scored well in the first three games, four games that he's had, bit down on the weekend. But once that price dips below $500,000, because it probably is, it's probably getting below $500,000. If you said to someone at the start of the season, there will be a time where you can grab Clayton Oliver for below $500,000 and he hasn't had an injury and it's smack bang in the middle of upgrade season, everyone will be saying, "Ooh, let me take a piece of that. I'd love that." Yeah. If you can get, you know, Jordan Dawson for sub 550K or 560, 570K even, you just want to grab a piece of that. And you've just, the trick when it comes to these sorts of players is that, yes, we've got half a dozen players coming down in price. You know, as you've got on the screen, you've got Brayshaw, you've got Dacos, you've got Sisley, you've got LDU coming down, you've got players like Nick Newman's coming down in price. You've got Darcy Parrish is coming down in price. These are all players that have top eight midfielders, top six defenders in the past. They have the ability to be able to do it. What the difference is you've got to see the players that have the ability to be able to turn it around. So I think that Oliver and Dawson have that. I think that LDU has that. I think that Nick Dacos clearly has that. I would question whether someone like James Sisley has that. It's probably in Supercoach, he's probably able to because of the fact that he's rewarded so well for his intercept marking. And then you've got to look for the ones that have got the good runs coming up. Where do they have the fixtures that turn? So if you look at someone like Clayton Oliver, he's got Brisbane Lions this week, not a great fixture. The bye the week after, the two fixtures straight after the bye, Richmond into Geelong. Great fixtures for inside midfielders. Who does Dawson have round six, round seven? It's Essendon into North Melbourne. Great fixtures for inside midfielders. That's when you're looking to jump on these sorts of players. You've got to combine the price where they bottom out, the break even, and when the right time to jump on is. And if you can nail it and you get onto Clayton Oliver or Jordan Dawson or Nick Dacos or Sisley or LDU the week before they go 140, you're ahead of the pack. Because everyone then sees, oh, they've got that pop score. Their price is on the way back up now. Let me jump on. And you go, great, let me go find the next one.
Yeah, for sure. And my thing is, that's why I kind of don't want to push for your Zach Merritts. And as much as they're in form at the moment, I feel like you're clogging up your midfield and you're spending top capital where, you've got to kind of put back of your mind what the players have already done and think what they're going to do in the future. We know Clary, Dawson, these guys can go on runs for 120 for, half a season, even up to a full season, like especially Clary, he's done it multiple times. So if you don't have enough spots to bring these guys in and the three of us and everybody else out there is, upgrading a Roberts and turning him straight into a Clary, you're going to be behind the eight ball because you're going to be scrambling to try to fill the rest of your team with probably other value options, which aren't going to, match the sort of points that, a Clary or a Dawson can get.
Yeah, I'll go so far as to say, if Clayton Oliver shows a high score this week, probably anything over 100 this week with a high CBO rate and good contested possessions, good marks, good tackling, he will be my number one priority come round seven.
Yep.
I think that just says it all. I think that's what you got to look for.
Yeah, that comes to the debate say someone like Clary dropping maybe an extra 20K versus the fact that how many points he could monster sort of Richmond's midfield for. But I feel like that'll be a good question at the time. But yeah, if he does show anything, as you said, and we know this guy, given the fact that the role has not changed. He finds the ball so easy. He can easily, with those sort of fixtures coming up, 115 back to his best plus. And yeah, man, like anybody, it doesn't matter if it's just Clary, take the name away from it. If you're giving me a midfielder for 500k, which can average you 115 plus, you're taking it every day of the week, no matter who it is.
Exactly.
100%. Which makes it tough, because you've got guys that are bottoming out, like a Nick Dacos, that the longer, if you've everywhere, gone against him, oh boy, that's a challenging balance of, do I maximize a Oliver or a Dawson when they're at this bargain basement price, and do I run this gauntlet of one more week of not Dacos? Do I just go one more week? And this is where it becomes this really delicate balance for coaches that feel, if they faded him right now, feel like they're in a slightly level head position to those that started him. Okay, that might be true, but in 3 weeks' time, if you still haven't been able to get to him, yep, you might have prioritized Oliver over him, and that's absolutely okay too. This is where it's so hard to get a read on teams at the moment, with how they've used their trade boosts, with their starting structures, with the premiums that they've had from buys. It's way too early in a season right now to look at your rank and go, that's exactly where I sit in the ecosystem of Supercoach, because there's way too many variables. And with upgrade season now really only just starting this week, so much can change. And so on upgrade season, let's officially declare it open and ring the bells and say, yes, we're kind of officially there now. As we wrap up the episode, I think most coaches have used at least one boost. I think it's a great initiative that Supercoach have brought in. It's a great new strategic element. Knowing that we've got a bunch of cows, we've talked at the top of the episode about three, that certainly one has to be jumped on this week that is pre-bubble. Sharp is still very much in play. Dempsey, Darcy, still very much in play. Then you've got the others, and you've got these guys all bottoming out in the next fortnight. Does it just lock us into, we're boosting this week, Swizz, or is, no, there a genuine reason where you could still just play it with a 1 or 2 week trade this week?
I'm really trying to avoid it because I've already used two myself, but there's a part of me that's gone, I like to kind of be aggressive. I feel like there'll be people there. It's always a great debate, this, because like I look at my team and go, there's a world where I don't even have to make a trade this week. But other people are going to be aggressive, and it's those aggressive moves which will help me probably in the long run. So if I can, in perfect world, get away with doing the two, I will. But if I need that third, and I think it comes down to, if I want to try to get a Marshall in for a Grundy, I might need to make that third trade to just, because of that cash that I'm going to need, which would mean going a week early on house to a closely. But if I'm not making the boost this week, I'm going to be making that next week anyway, because of all the options are. So may as well just bring that forward this week and then target the two guys I want. And even if it's a case where you end up using most of your boosts pre-buy, the fact through the buy period, we get three trades during that time as it is. And you really want to be aiming for, by walking into that round 15, where your team is pretty well full premium. So the trades outside of injuries have less value after the buys. And because we don't have as many trades, the boosts actually have very minimal value, unless something horrific goes wrong after the buy period.
Yeah.
Mm. You similar sentiment? I'll say that. Yeah, I do have a very similar sentiment. I will say that in the 2 years prior to this year, where we've had the boost across both Supercoach, and I'll bring in Dream Team because I think it's a very similar idea, I've only carried into the buys across both formats and across both years a boost once. I carried in one boost last year into Dream Team during the buys, and that's it. Mm. I think that using them during this mid-year buy period is 100% the best way to play. I think you can get really aggressive. I don't think it can be considered forcing, because if you can get, let's say next week we have, you know, the likes of Closey, Comburn, Graham, potentially another rookie pops their hands up. We've just talked about the premiums that are bottoming out. We've got Dacos that's bottoming out. We've got LDU, Oliver, Dawson that are all coming down in price. If you can, over the next 2 weeks, get all three of those rookies and get two premiums in, you are probably ahead of the pack. So that means to get all five of those in, you have to use five trades, which means you have to use a boost either this week or next week. And if you do it right, there is a potential where you could get, you know, four good rookies, two good premiums, use boosts in this week and next week, and you're off to the races. Then you're not worried about having to color McKercher or a Sanders or a Reed or a Darcy or a Dempsey early, because you're already ahead. You've got the next best rookie to be able to come in at D6 or M8 to fill in their spot, and you can grab the premium that you want. I think that using a boost this week or next week is almost, I would say, a necessity. I think that if I looked at most teams, I would struggle to say that there isn't a boost that's required over the next 2 weeks per se. But I would think about how you're planning your trades for next week. So when you're doing your trades this week, look at what the options are next week. Look at who your targets are. Look at who you want to bring in, who you want to trade out, and then decide. Then make the decision. Is it this week that I want to boost, or is it next week?
Or both. Why not?
Or both.
Exactly right. Hey, Minimark, it's been a pleasure, as always, chatting Supercoach with you, mate. Looking forward to doing it again very, very soon.
It's been a great one.
And Swizz, what a debut from you. Let's be honest, you've been doing podcasts and video podcasts for a long time. Where can we get in touch with you across social media? And if we're just new to Supercoach Insider, where can we find your boys' fine work as well?
Yeah, sure. Swizz26 for me directly, or Supercoach Insider for the three of us, which is myself, Ben and Chris. And we do have Spotify, but YouTube is our big thing. So Supercoach Insider, just put that into your YouTube and yeah, you'll find us. So no, we do appreciate the support, and it's great to finally get on here and talk Supercoach with both of you guys.
No, it's been great. If you missed any of those things that Swizz just mentioned, we've got them in the description of this episode, so you can go and check that out. If you're listening to this as an audio podcast and you haven't subscribed or left a five-star review, not too late. Go and sort that out right now. And you can go back in time and listen to any of the episodes. And also, when these strategy roundtables drop, you'll get notified straight to your device and you'll be able to listen to them straight away. If you haven't checked us out on YouTube, you can. You can go and see these episodes, the strategy roundtables, all the details for where you can find our YouTube. Well, pretty easy. You search Coaches Panel in YouTube. It's there. It's easy. Or you can check out the link in the description of the audio podcast. Subscribe to the channel. And if you want to become a part of our Patreon supporter group, they get access to a ton of in-season rewards. They get an extra podcast at all tier levels. So whether it be that cash cow, breakout, or premium tier, or if you want to jump into that premium level, you get a round review episode. There's so much good stuff in there. All the details to join the Patreon supporter group are in the details of this episode. Hey, good luck this week. It's best 18. Your Swans and your Pies players are not counting on field, but you can use them for loopholes. You can trade them out at various times during the week. We hope cash cows and all your rookie roulette moves go absolutely right. We hope you crush your vice captaincy call nice and early in the round, so you don't have that Friday night dilemma of what to do. Not get it done early, and hopefully it goes your way. But until we chat with you next week, we wish you all the best, and we hope you have a fantastic week in Supercoach.